Blog Talk Radio.
The following broadcast is brought to you by the iGolf Sports Network. The Women of Golf Show is sponsored by the iGolf Sports Network and Golf Tips Magazine. iGolf Sports is a live stream broadcast and media production company providing quality programming designed to attract the golfing enthusiast. And Golf Tips, the game's most in-depth instruction magazine with insightful reviews on the latest equipment, tips from top teaching professionals, helping you improve your game from tee to green. Good morning. Welcome to the Women of Golf, the number one women's golf show around the world, with hosts Ted Odorico and Cindy Miller. Join them as they interview some of the best players from the Epson, LPGA, and Legends Tour, and so many others helping to elevate women's golf. So without further ado, here are your hosts, Ted and Cindy.
All right. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Women of Golf Show. I'm Ted Odorico, your host. And unfortunately, Cindy is not going to join us this morning. She's doing one of her boot camps and is out there helping to make some of you better players. So, but she'll be back next week. But I've got a great show for you planned. We're going to have join here in just a moment. I'm going to introduce her, our very special guest of the week, Michelle Malia. She's a LPGA professional at Chelsea Piers in Manhattan, New York. She'll be joining us in just a second. And then I'm going to do a no BS zone called the Golfing Mindset and Emotions. It's a pickup from last week. Of course, if you remember, if you tuned in last week, we did the physical part of the game. And this week I'm going to combine the mental side and the emotional side of the game. And we'll see if maybe Michelle's game to join me on that. But otherwise, we'll just have a great interview and I'll do it myself, I guess. But anyways, let me tell you a little bit about Michelle. She is an LPGA professional, as I mentioned, bringing more than 20 years of teaching and coaching experience to Chelsea Piers. Most recently, she was the director of golf at Monmouth University. The LPGA named her National Golf Coach of the Year in 2008 for her efforts as head coach at Fairleigh Dickinson University, where the women's program won 8 Division I tournaments, earning a berth to the NCAA championship. In 2020, the first tee of Jersey Shore, honored her as their ACE Award honoree, and she serves on various boards for junior and women's golf. She has been featured on Fox Sports as a leading instructor for stroke survivors and was the lead instructor for the Arc of Monmouth, providing instructional for athletes preparing for the Special Olympics. So please welcome my very special guest this morning on the Women of Golf, Michelle Malia. Good morning,
hey,
Michelle.
Ted.
How are
Good
you?
Morning. I'm well. Thanks
Good morning.
For having me this morning. Yeah.
Not a problem. And I apologize. Actually, you can battle it out with Cindy. Cindy was supposed to be here this morning, but she, unfortunately, as you heard, had a boot camp this morning. So she had another engagement. But so you'll have to battle it out with her for not being here and joining us this morning. But she sends her best anyways. So let me ask
awesome.
You something. And again, yeah, no obligation. Normally what we were going to do is we were going to sort of start things off with what we call the no BS zone. And it's a discussion about the mindset and, the mental game and the emotions. As I said, it was a pickup from last week's discussion on mastering your game, becoming the best player that you can be. Do you want to join in on that? Or is your time restricted that, you're limited to just sort of the interview? Because I can certainly do it myself. It's not a problem.
No, I would love to join in on that. That'd be fantastic.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about you and I on the on your side of things, and then we'll pick that up on the second half of the show. So, as I mentioned, you're out at Chelsea Piers in Manhattan, and it's a great facility. If you've never been there, for those tuning into the show, you need to go and visit. It's a great facility in Manhattan. You can just tell us a little bit about it, and then we'll get into our discussion.
Yeah, for sure. I started at Chelsea Piers last April, and I'm from New Jersey. I'm a Jersey girl, and I never expected that I was going to make a move into Manhattan at all. In fact, when I, first couple of interviews I had here, I said to my family, I'm like, Manhattan? Am I going to Manhattan to teach golf? And it didn't take me long to fall in love with the facility. It's fantastic. It's You know, if anybody, like you said, if you never had a chance to get out here to see it, it's well worth the trip. It's a four-story driving range, covered bays. We have 52 covered bays that we hit over the Hudson River, basically. It's the views here are spectacular. I know my friends hate me every day when I post my work picture from here at sunset, because it's amazing.
Right.
But in addition to that, you know, we have a very vibrant golf academy. The head professional here, Steve Bourbon, it worked with Bob Toski for years and many mini tour and tour players, was also part of the reason why I wanted the job to have an opportunity to work with him. And, you know, the setting here in Manhattan, you know, obviously there's a big demand for golf here. I didn't realize how much of a concrete jungle it kind of is as far as golf is concerned, you know, access to golf courses and facilities and that type of thing. So we're in this really cool place and niche where we get hundreds of golfers here a day, and lots of different visits from whether it's special events, corporate, you know, getaways that we host here. But in addition to that, just an amazing, vibrant instructional program and a full golf academy that was really cool. We have three superstations that are inside with an indoor bunker, chipping area, putting green, putting studio. So we really can do all facets of the game here. And we're making some changes as well and really updating the things we're doing with the Golf Academy, adding Operation 36 for this season. And we're just about to start our first LPGA Girls Golf Club here, which is going to be amazing for Manhattan. So just some really great things.
You know, and just to go back to what you were saying earlier, you know, what's interesting about it is it's a very high-end, high-class range that obviously is on the Hudson River. So you've got some, as you said, some spectacular views, but also, too, it's climate-controlled. So, you know, even in some of the most difficult weather, you can still be out there and working on your game. And, you know, it's very comfortable. I know I was there, obviously, in the summertime a few years back. But I know even in some of the cooler climates, you know, folks still like to get out there and work on their game. And it's a great facility to do that. And like you said, you've got so many amenities there available for those that, you know, not just want to work on their game, but, you know, if they want to get a little something to eat and whatnot. So there's a lot of great things there. Right under the roof, so to speak. And as you said, it's four stories, so there's plenty of bays there to work out of. There's an area to work on some of your short game and whatnot as well. But it's just a great time and a great facility right in Manhattan, which is something that you would not have expected. But then again, it is Manhattan, so you never know what you might find there. So it's just a great facility. It's been there for, right? I mean, am I not right? I mean,
If
somebody said, you know, golf and, you know, right in Manhattan, people would be scratching their head, and it's just not something that you would think of. But it's been there for a while, and it's been very successful. So tell us a little bit about some of the programs that you have. I mean, specifically, maybe a general idea of some of the programs, but specifically some of the programs that you offer.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So, you know, we kind of do. We have we have kind of a soup to nuts kind of program here, which is fantastic. So, we offer introductory classes. Golf for One course, you know, golf for the new player, golf for women, intermediate classes, one day schools, and those, I tell you, we're extremely busy. They sell out pretty fast. Our women's program is like through the roof. I think as soon as we send out a link that the classes are open, we sell them out pretty quickly. We see a lot of, especially from women here, a lot of women who are coming not only for their personal lives to learn golf, but also for business. So we attract a lot of people who don't play, as far as our golf schools are concerned, who want to really learn the game. And because of our setup here, we really can offer everything to them, you know, to really get a real solid base to go out and continue to improve, and also to feel comfortable when they go out and play on the golf course. So because of our setting, we do attract a lot of newer players, both men and women. I just see a lot of women on this side coming in for classes who are lawyers, are in the business district, who are being asked to play in corporate events, and they want to get here, really get the groundwork so they can feel comfortable on the golf course, as well as improve their game. So that part for me has been really exciting. If I, you know, obviously I enjoy teaching all levels of players, and I've taught, you know, close to the collegiate level, but I really enjoy teaching new players. It's kind of my thing. You know, I'm obviously a golf geek and excited about the game, and I think it just offers so many great opportunities for people. So that's been really a cool thing that I didn't expect, you know, when I got here. As far as, you know, some of the things, initiatives that we've put into place since I started, I just took over as the lead of our junior academy. So we offer, you know, an all-year program from peewee players all the way up to our elite junior program, which I oversee as well, with 40 kids who work with us a week, as well as having supervised practice here. It's great. And then, like, a really cool, vibrant junior camp situation in the summer. We run camps 12 weeks in the summertime every week. You know, we can have between 60 and 100 kids come through here. And we've been very good at partnering up with golf courses in the area. So, for example, our elite performance camp that we do here in the summer, we get our players on the golf course 3 times during that week. And so they get a real opportunity to have the instruction piece here, assessment video and launch monitors, all those great things, but then we get them on the golf course. So, again, something that, you know, like I said, when I said to my family, I'm going to Manhattan, how's this going to look? It's really an amazing place. It's probably for me personally, a great spot, you know. It really kind of fits my skill set. And we get to do a lot of different and unique things. We're rolling out Operation 36 for our junior program in the next couple weeks. And we're really excited about that because it will also include golf course opportunities at golf courses in the area. So the kids that are coming to our program are really getting an opportunity to have all types of technology, right, experiences. So they technology from video to launch monitor assessments, speed training, all those great things, but also the golf course piece, which I think is so important. So it's not just a driving range in Manhattan, right? It's really a fantastic, vibrant place.
Well, and it's great to meet people too. I mean, you know, if you're somebody that's fairly new to the game, there's a lot of, you know, a variety of different levels of players there. And, you know, it's an opportunity to connect with people that have a like-minded interest. You know, you go to other places and outside of golf and, you know, everybody has different interests. But when you're there at Chelsea Piers, you know that everybody's there for the same thing. They're there to, you know, to either work on their game or learn the game or what have you. So, you know, you're all kind of in the same boat, and it's nice that there's a variety of skill levels. I mean, you're going to have some players that go out there, just want to, you know, keep their game tuned up and they can strike the ball real well. And then you're going to have some others that, you know, maybe still have some work to do. So there's a variety of people and it's great. And I want to just focus on just for a minute or two, a little bit more on women's golf in Manhattan, because as you mentioned, it's really, really growing. And as you know, Michelle, in industry wide, women are the fastest growing group to the game of new golfers coming to the game. And it ranges, you know, probably younger than this, but from at least 13 up to, you know, 35, 40, maybe. Is the bulk of them, and then there's obviously other demographics outside. But so it's the largest group. I think now it's topping out at about 33% to 35% of all new golfers coming to the game are female, and that's a big group. What has been, you know, obviously there's a lot of different aspects to approach this from, but I'm curious to see what are women mainly looking for? Obviously, they want to learn to play the game, but what's some of the more common requests that you get from some of the new golfers coming in? And I'm obviously talking about female golfers coming in. What is it they're wanting to get out of the experience the most? What are some of the common things that you hear?
Well, you know, I'm going to approach this a couple ways. I mean, I think that you're absolutely right. I mean, it is a boom right now for women in golf, and, and that's fantastic. And I've been teaching for 25 years, and obviously at the beginning of, like, offering golf programs for women, you know, we always had pretty good numbers. You know what I mean? If you offered a class,
right,
you know, the numbers were pretty good. One of the things that I think is a theme as far as the women that we see here at Chelsea, and I actually have seen throughout my career, you know, obviously learning the game, but also learning all the aspects and all the pieces around it, meaning the culture, understanding they really want to have a basis of what the etiquette is, what are some of the themes of, as far as playing golf, what are they expected to do? So if they're going to a corporate event, you know, what is that going to be like, right? What's the dress going to be? What should I be, you know, what should my bag look like? How should I feel on the golf, or how should I approach playing the game? It's actually a lot more than just the mechanical pieces that they're looking for, if that makes sense.
Right.
It's all the other things.
Yep. No, it's perfect.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. So like, one of the things I've always – this is just a quick story. I remember many years ago I was working for a golf school, and I had a two-day beginner class. And so, of course, my students come in, and one of the men in the class, I always ask everybody, like, you know, why are you here? Who are you? And whatnot. And he says to me at the beginning of the class, he says, well, I'm here because I'm a procrastinator. And I kind of looked at him and said, well, what do you mean? And he's like, well, I just started a new job 6 months ago, and the board asked me to go play all the old courses in Scotland. And I leave on Monday. And this is Saturday.
Wow.
And I went, Juan, I said, I'm very upset with you. I said, Juan, I haven't been out there yet to play. That's number one. Number two, I have a lot of pressure in the next 48 hours to get you ready to go play St. Andrews.
Right.
And so, you know, that always stuck in my mind, that a little bit of a different approach to learning the game between men and women. A lot of the women I was teaching, even at that time, it was more about etiquette and understanding all the aspects of playing, so they felt ready, comfortable, and
right,
you know, had a green light to go out and play golf. So one of the things that, you know, I've really tried, and you're talking to the staff here, is that when we're talking to our women players in our women's classes, to really make sure that those pieces are included. You know, from buying clubs to feeling, you know, knowing all the aspects of playing the game, that's a lot of what they're looking for as well, which makes sense, right?
Right.
Especially if you're a lawyer in a firm and you're being invited to go play in a corporate event, certainly you want to know more than what a 7-iron is, right? So I think that's a big piece of it as well.
Yeah, I think it's a confidence thing, too. I mean, you know, obviously women have played for many years, but it was usually under different circumstances. Either they grew up in the game somehow. You know, obviously the LPGA had early pioneers like Shirley Spork and Marilyn Smith and many others that really started to spearhead the women's part of the game and essentially created, obviously, the LPGA. But you know, there's a lot of women executives, and I know, you know, I teach mainly corporate golf, meaning I deal with a lot of different executives. And one of the things that I always hear, too, is from the women's standpoint is, you know, I'm tired of, and I know this sounds a little cliche, but I'm tired of, you know, walking up to the water cooler and hearing the guys talk about their golf games, and I have no clue what they're talking about, or I feel left out, and they wanted to be included. And I actually had a guest on who now, she's not an LPGA professional, but teaches women's clinics and that now, very similar to what you were just talking about. And she works with a lot of LPGA professionals. And what she said was that a lot of women really would love to play, but again, they're not comfortable. And it's not so much the physical part of the game, you know, hitting the perfect shot. They know that takes time, but just not understanding the game at all is
right.
What detracts them and makes them nervous and uncomfortable. They don't want to get up there and feel stupid and whatnot. And you know, I used to, when I was moving up through my ranks, you know, I used to enjoy playing with the women because they were more fun. The guys were boring. You know, the guys would puff up their chest and brag about how, you know, great they played last weekend, and then we're out this weekend and they can't hit the ball worth beans. So, you know, the guys were always a different beast to play with,
yep.
and they were, I had more laughs at them than I did with the ladies. But the ladies were very humble and wanting to really understand the game. It, you know, obviously they want to improve physically, but they just want to understand the game and, like, as you said, the etiquette and things like that. So I think that's great that, you know, we're seeing more and more coming to the game. What I would really like to see is not just them come to the game, but I'd really like to see, and I know it has been increasing, but I'd like to see it ramp up even more, is more and more getting into your side of the game, the teaching side, yep. you know, and with the LPGA and whatnot. That's where I would really like to see more growth and faster than what it has been. And I'm not sure how to do that. What are your thoughts on that? How do we transition them? Because women are great teachers anyways. I mean, they, you know, raise the kids and they teach them how to do different things. How can we get them encouraged to get out there once they learn to play this game to say, hey, you know what, I want to maybe take this to another level. I'm not good enough to maybe play on the LPGA, but I do have good skills in other areas. How can we sort of convert them over into the teaching side of things maybe?
That's, you know, that's a really great question. I mean, and I agree with you. I, you know, the one thing I would like to say too is, like, I'm hoping, my big hope right now, especially in our area here, the New Jersey, Connecticut area, the fact that, and New York, the fact that the LPGA is going to have 4 events in New Jersey this year.
Yes.
And New mm-hmm. Jersey is finally having a state open for women,
mm-hmm.
the first ever, I think it's huge. Because, you know, to be honest, I mean, we're still in a very male dominated industry, right?
Right.
So, you know, right, we'll use our staff here. I'm the only woman on staff. And I think one of the things, one of the hopes that I have, is especially with the growth of LPGA Girls Golf Club. I mean, that program is insane right now. Really
right.
capturing girls at a younger age. And seeing if, I mean, industry-wide, if we can start creating a lot more opportunities with maybe some more life balance for women. I think, you know, that's something that is, I think, difficult and a challenge. You know, our industry is, you know, if you're a teaching professional or work at a club, you know, it's not an easy gig in the sense of hours and work life balance. And I don't think it's just for women.
Right.
I think for men as well. And that's something I think industry wide needs to change. You know, I mean, if I'm a 25-year-old woman and, you know, and I have an opportunity to maybe not do golf, but teach, become a teacher or a lawyer or whatever else, my work life balance may be a whole lot better in that sense, and maybe even financially better than it would be to work up the ranks as a teacher in the golf industry. And I think that's something that really needs to be looked at, right? You know, how do we do that, right?
Yeah, it's a challenge because, you know, you're exactly right. You know, one of the things, and it's a little bit the same with men too, because the truth be known, in any business, does whether it's golf or something else, and I was told this a long time ago, and by gosh, it was true. You know, as an individual, male or female, there is a certain point when your peers, and I'm talking not necessarily, when I say peers, not necessarily in your same age group, but a little bit older, start to take you serious. So it's very challenging for, you know, somebody in their early 20s, even if they've got the skill set as an LPGA or a PGA or what have you, to then try to teach somebody in their 50s or 60s how to play this game that's maybe played for 30 years. There's a challenge there. So it almost, I wonder if maybe we need to, you know, and I know this term gets used a lot, almost a grassroots where we're getting some of these younger students in working with the younger kids first, get them in there, getting them, you know, trained and getting them excited about wanting to play. You know, some of these young girls, as an example, coming in where they're maybe only, you know, 10, 12, 13 years old that look up to these. The reason I say that is because, you know, Cindy and I interview a lot of the Epson Tour players each season. And, you know, they're all kind of in that camp. And they, you know, often tell stories about how they would go and, you know, these young girls will just, you know, flock to them because they're, you know, they're looking up to them. So I almost wonder if maybe that's an approach that we could look at. What do you think?
I think that's absolutely. I mean, I think that touches upon what LPGA Girls Golf Club can do, right? As an example, that's why I brought that up before,
yep.
In the sense of really creating mentoring, a mentorship, whether it's like, so whether it's with the Epson Tour player or the LPGA Tour player or teaching professionals, mm-hmm. right? Women
mm-hmm.
teaching
yep.
professionals who are networking with younger kids to see that it's possible that that's something you can do, right? If there's no example there, that's very hard for a younger person to make that leap. I also think that as an industry, one of the things that helped me when I was a young teaching professional, I was lucky that I had a lot of really good mentors, you know, that
right.
Took the extra time to help me, you know? A real quick example, for me personally, I obviously looked up to all the tour players, right? And this is something that, you know, in my mind as a kid, going to see Nancy Lopez at Upper Montclair, you know,
oh, yeah.
when I was young,
yeah,
was
exactly.
like, that was it. Like, that was it. But when I was at Rutgers University and I had just got into coaching there after I graduated, the head professional there, Art de Blasio, we had an 18-hole, you know, league that we had. And I approached him and I said, hey, like, would you be okay with me? I was like 23 years old. Would you be okay with me trying to do a winter clinic with them? And he said, Michelle, absolutely. And this is a public grassroots facility, right, that I worked at.
Right.
And he worked. He literally sat with me. We made the curriculum up and we talked about it. He helped me teach it. He didn't even take a dime for it. He did it on his time. So I'm just giving that quick example of, like, what we can do as an industry, as professionals, really kind of, like, you know, putting our hand out, really making that networking connection with these younger players that we're seeing, especially because we have so many girls who are playing now, right? So
mm-hmm.
kind of really, you know, one of the things I've always liked about the golf industry in a sense is really was an apprenticeship, at least when I got involved, was kind of an apprenticeship kind of concept. And I always felt like I was fortunate that I had people around me that saw that I had talent, but also went the extra mile, right? At a time where I was probably one of only one or two girls, right, who were playing,
right,
back in, you know, the 80s. So,
yeah, and it's obviously there's a lot of thought. And just one final note, and then I want to go to one final question for you, give you an opportunity,
sure.
not question, but really to give you an opportunity to talk about this because I know you're obviously excited about it. But you know, I think it really has to get into more entrenched into the school systems. And there are a lot of programs. Unfortunately, many of the programs tend to be more player dominant. So, you know, those are looking to get into junior golf and want to, you know, maybe get out and play collegiate and so, which is great. But I'm wondering if we need to be as robust about those that maybe don't necessarily have the skills to be a top player, still have a good golf game and maybe want to work on the teaching side. So I'm wondering if when we get into the school systems, get more heavily into the school systems at an earlier age, but start to foster some of the growth towards those and say, hey, you know what, you may or may not ever make it out in the LPGA Tour, but, you know, there's other opportunities and make them aware of that so that they're going to go, yeah, you know what, that's something I never thought of or I didn't know it was available to me. So I think, like you said, getting into that earlier stage of development, like so many other dominant sports do, I think that's where we really need to start driving the efforts in. And obviously, as you mentioned, the LPGA girls golf programs certainly are doing that. But I think we even need to expand that even further. And I know they're doing it. It takes time like everything, but this would be a good opportunity for some of the big sponsors and big manufacturing companies in golf to really pony up and say, hey, we need to develop something here. And really get it into a much more efficient and get them to put some dollars behind it. So we need to pressure them to do that, I think, instead of just, you know, supporting the top echelon of golf.
Yeah,
I think that's
no,
a,
that's, no. Yeah.
In
that's
other words,
very
shame them.
Yeah, I know. I agree. And you know, the other, no, I agree. Well, you know, what's interesting too, and I just, as we're just, you know, just I'm thinking about this. So And I'm thinking even about my group of players that I play with at Rutgers. And this is, I graduated in 94. We're going back several years. But we have many, many, many players who came out of that program that are amazing teaching professionals. Gia Lewiski is one. Cheryl
right.
Anderson was a teammate of mine. You know, we were best friends in college. So the reason I just – and I'm naming just two out of the class quickly, but I think – and I'm hoping that as, you know, the game has gotten bigger for girls and for women, that as we move on and we're now in different positions, right, kind mm-hmm. of ourselves going up the ranks, our numbers are growing.
Right.
And that may be a piece of this as well. And maybe we need to network ourselves a little bit better to get after these sponsors. To say, hey, look, you know, we want to grow the game and we want to get more women involved in the game, and how great would that be? And you're absolutely right. You know, a lot of junior programs are all about the competition, right? Which is great, and that's
yeah.
part of it. But there's more to this than that, you know?
Right. The majority of these young girls are never going to make it. I mean, that's it's the same thing with the men. You know, it's a very small
yep.
percentage of them that are ever going to get into the top. You know, some of them may get out on tour and that, but, you know, after a few years, they kind of fizzle out because it's so highly competitive. So you're right. They need to, you know, have other opportunities made available at a very early age so that they can say, okay, I'm going to give my shot here, see if I've got the game to play. Okay, if not, that's okay. I've got this to fall back on, or I've got that to fall back on. And I think it's got to be, and again, I'm not trying to knock them, but I think with a lot of these big corporations, it can't be just about sponsoring big events and players and that sort of thing. That's important. That needs to be there as well, or ambassadors, but they also need to start saying, okay, let's look at, I mean, a good example is Nike did that decades ago in basketball. I mean, they started their
yep.
own school where
yep.
they started, you know, recruiting these young players. And I mean, look how successful they've been. So there's great opportunities. And I know they are doing it at some level. I just think it needs to be bigger. I said I had one more thing I wanted to talk to you about real quick is I know you were inducted into the Hall of Fame 2023 for your 2007 and 8 women's golf team at Fairleigh Dickinson University. Tell us a little bit about that. You obviously have to be very honored to receive that and that honor. Tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. Oh my God, Ted. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up. It was so tremendous honor and one of the, you know, highlights of my career for sure. So the story, part of the reason why we were inducted is that I, in March 2006, I had taken over the men's program at FDU. We didn't have a women's team. And so that May, we got the green light to start the women's program. So I was able, our first season, I got one really great player. It sounds like a movie. I just told one of my clients a story, and they're like, when's the movie coming out? It's very funny, interesting, and amazing. So I was able to get a young player from Germany to come play at FDU. And the crazy part of it was that I only got connected with her because I had made a phone call on the recruiting side, on the men's side. And I spoke to his parent, and he told me that his son was going to another school. And I said, you know, wished him the best of luck. And as we're getting off the phone, he said, wait, Michelle, like, you know, you said that you may be starting a women's program. And I said, yeah. He goes, well, we had an exchange student who lived with us from Germany last year. She's a really good player. You know, maybe she would want to come to FDU. So her name is Eve Mayer. And so I was, when I was told that we could start the women's team that that fall, I was able to track her down on the internet. And in that time, recruiting rules, I can only talk to her once a week. And I talked to her every Wednesday for several weeks and told her that despite the fact that we didn't have a women's team, we would go to the NCAAs in our second season. And
wow.
And she believed me. So we signed her in July. And then, of course, I didn't have any other players. So I recruited a couple seniors that were athletes in other sports for the first year. So I surrounded Eve with a softball player and a bowler, and another athlete on campus. And we played that first season with one player and several players that we taught how to play. And Eve that year ended up becoming Rookie of the Year and Player of the Year. But we had an entire year of recruit. And then I brought in an entire class the following year. They were all freshmen. So we had one sophomore and five freshmen, and they went on to set every record in FDU history, which still stands. They won eight tournaments. We went to the NCAAs, and they were a really special group. And so I got a call several months ago that we were all going to be inducted. It was amazing. All of our players came back from overseas. Three of them flew in from Germany, one from the UK. Their parents came. It was a great testament to the program and to them and what it meant. So it was amazing and fantastic. And so I probably one of the nicest special honors I've ever had.
Yeah, that is a great story. I definitely need to move that into the movie direction. I think that would make for a great movie as well. Well, congratulations to you and, of course, the others on the team and that for, such a great accomplishment, especially in such a short time. I mean, that's just amazing. All right, we're going to have to shift gears here as we're moving in time. And I got to be mindful. I know you've got to leave and get back to work, so I don't want to keep you too much past time. So we're going to take a very, very quick break to listen to a message from Golf Tips Magazine. And then you and I are going to have a great discussion in the No BS Zone on the golfing mindset and the emotions. We'll be right back.
The following ad is sponsored by Golf Tips Magazine.
Are you tired of being short off the tee? And what about those three putts? Forget about it. It's time you got serious about your game. Golf Tips, the most in-depth magazine in the industry. For over 30 years, Golf Tips has delivered expert content such as the latest golf instruction from America's top pros, simple-to-follow practice and game improvement drills, fitness and mental game tips, equipment, training aids, accessory and apparel reviews, golf destinations and travel tips for every budget, and so much more. Don't miss a single issue. Go to golftipsmag.com and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back. I'm here with my very special guest this morning, Michelle Malia, LPGA professional out at Chelsea Piers in Manhattan. And yes, there is a great facility in downtown Manhattan. You got to check it out. And we'll get you more information as we wrap up in a little bit. All right, Michelle has very graciously agreed to extend her time. And this is a segment that Cindy and I have been doing for a number of years. It's called the No BS Zone. And we always have a great discussion and talk about different things. And as I said, last week, we touched on, this is an article actually that I put in Golf Tips Magazine for the March-April issue. So it's already out at newsstands. And I just thought this would make for a great discussion. So last week, we touched on there's three factors. Really, if you want to master your game, becoming the best player you can be. And first, obviously, is the physical game. You've got to have a physical game. But you also have to have the mind game, the mental game or emotional side of things. And that's what we're going to talk to a little bit this week. So if you want to be in helping to find your peak performance. So these are some of the characteristics designed to help you find your optimal mindset or mental and emotional state. And although you may not play like a top athlete, you can certainly learn from them. So here are some keys, and we'll just sort of have a general conversation. I'll read you a little bit, Michelle, and then I'll get you to jump in on the discussion as well. So here's the first one, is performing as if you're on. So what I mean by that is if you've ever watched top athletes, Rory McIlroy comes to mind, they typically perform at their peak when fully absorbed in what they're doing with little or no conscious thought during the performance. So the takeaway from this is your performance should feel effortless instead of trying to overpower or force shots. So this can help to reduce stress and, of course, anxiety greatly. So try not to control or micromanage everything. This is a real good one, I think. Don't you agree, Michelle? Because everybody, and I'm sure you see it, try to force things. What are your thoughts here? I mean, what do you do with a student that you can clearly tell? And the reason I use Rory is if you remember back several years ago when he won the Masters, he talked about, somebody asked him, and a reporter asked him, he said, you know, what were you thinking about that? He said, I wasn't thinking about anything. It just, I got into the zone, and that's really what we're talking about, is that autopilot, is they just get in there. They're so confident in their game. So I think confidence is a big one, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. And, you know, that first one, if we could do that with everybody, right, that would be, you know, amazing as far as being able to really be at your peak. The thing with Rory, too, that I find so interesting, when you heard him talk after, like, even the British Open last year, you know, he talks a lot about surrendering the outcome, that when he gets caught up in trying to make an outcome or a specific result, that's when he gets in trouble. So, you know, he's an amazing example of this. I know for myself, in the few times that I was really felt like I was on autopilot playing, the confidence level was so huge, right? But also everything felt like it was moving in slow motion. You know, it was really, you know, that it sounds cliche, but one shot at a time type of concept. So, I'm on a teaching level and working with younger junior players, we see this a lot. One of the things that I think I try to do, or I think it would be helpful, I think managing expectations is a big piece of this. And two, I do this a lot with a lot of my clients who are very type A and tend to be overly critical. So even in a practice session, you know, I'll have them literally, we'll pick a target, you know, or pick an area on the range where we're working on something. And what I may have them do is count how many balls went out of that range and how many balls went out, you know, either right or left of where we were going. And majority of the time, like 80% of the time, they're doing very well. They just don't think that they are. So that helps build the confidence as well. So I think there's a lot about managing your expectations. And again, as cliche as it sounds, like breaking things up into smaller pieces. We're not trying to do this all in one shot. It's one piece at a time and building significant confidence. I had a conversation with a caddy on the PGA Tour, and he was talking about the confidence that a lot of his players had after they hit a bad shot that they felt like no matter what position that they were in, they were going to be able to conquer the next one. And I think if we can get our students to kind of start to build confidence in, like, in a quantifiable way, I think that would be very helpful.
I couldn't agree more. And this sort of leads into the next one is being focused in the moment. You know, again, athletes perform their best when they are not overanalyzing how they play, overthinking their technique, and worrying about outcomes, and mentally replaying every mistake they have made during the round. So the takeaway here, obviously, is this requires you to be present in the moment, have full trust in your ability to make quality shots, and be blind to all the potential distractions that can interfere with play. And the reason why I say this, you made a really good point, is you allow your players, in other words, you cause them to refocus on something. You gave them a task to refocus on. What that does is it distracts them from the normal things that they're thinking, well, you know, I've got to have my arm in this place and I've got to do this and I've got to do that. You're saying, okay, here's your target. How many are in the target? How many are outside? How many are going left, right? So you're giving them a sense of focus and keeping them in the moment as the task at hand, as opposed to thinking about other things they have no control over. Your thoughts here?
Well, yeah, no, absolutely. So we do this real quick. We do this. I do this with my elite junior program. We do it with anybody. But we do a little exercise where they have to list what they can control and what they can't control. And what they end up finding at the end of like the session is that they don't control much that happens on the golf course, right? We don't play defense. We can only control how we react to the shots that are in front of us. So kind of building those skills to be able to focus and know and focus on the task at hand rather than everything else. That's one, I think, really big piece. I also think there has to be a reality check that of a 4.5-5 hour round, being able to focus and then not focus. Do you know what I mean? You can't be in this intense focused state for 4.5 hours. So it's impossible. So, you know, I had some really good players that played for me that would do things like, you know, in between shots, you know, pull out a cartoon book. I had players who used to count clouds. I had players that would sing songs, you know, whatever it might be. but these places and times and you know, within a round to be able to just not focus, right, not think about a lot of other things, but then get back to the shot at hand. I think some of this, too, is knowing yourself and, like, knowing your tendencies and what will help you get back into that good mindset. It's all about mindset, for sure.
Yeah, and you see a lot of players, I can think of a number over the years that, you know, stood over the ball, even top players. I mean, Sergio Garcia was one that, I mean, they used to criticize him because he was, you know, re-gripping his club about 30 times, and he was just standing over the ball. And, you know, it caused him a lot of problems in his career. The next one I want to move on, just to keep things moving here, is being in control of emotions. This is a big one. Top athletes perform optimally when they take charge of their emotions instead of allowing emotions to dictate their level of play. For the average golfer to perform at their peak, they need to have clear, non-judgmental mind. This type of quiet mind helps to keep you off that emotional roller coaster. So the takeaway here is being able to manage your emotions can be a real game changer, which obviously results in more consistent scoring. So, again, having control of your emotions is definitely something that you have to be really mindful. Give me your thoughts here on being in control of your emotions.
No, to me, that's huge. You know, one of the things that, and this is going to sound very simple, but, you know, the negative self-talk and the judgment about golf shots, right? Brutal. People are brutal to themselves, aren't they, on the golf course?
Oh, yeah.
You know, so, oh, my God, brutal. So one of the things I've talked to my players about, even here at Chelsea, is talking to yourself like you're your best friend, right? That sounds really a weird kind of concept, but think about that. If you were playing golf or caddying for your friend, the one thing you would not be saying is, I suck, you know, for lack of a better word.
No.
So, or
right.
Here we go again. We would never say that. It would be, let's stay in the moment. Let's get back on task. So being able to control the self-talk as well as the emotions that are connected to that, right? It's, I think, is absolutely crucial in building a really sense of a quiet mind that can just play. And the last thing I want to say, too, you brought up the Sergio example.
Yep.
You know, I use him a lot when I'm working with people. I think one of the things that makes golf challenging, among a number of things, is that it's a non-reactionary sport. You know, we don't have an opportunity to go run, you know, sprints to get a lot of the adrenaline out, nor do we react to a ball coming to us. So I think in our practice, any way we can start to, you know, have better self-talk, be more positive, less judgmental, and also remember, if we can, to build some rhythm and timing into what we're doing instead of feeling like we're a statue over the ball, you know, would be extremely helpful as well.
Yeah, and I think you have to – I think better players are able to sort of discharge that negative energy. So if they've hit a bad shot, you know, they get, you know, damn, I, you know, or darn or whatever, you know, I've hit a bad shot, but then they move on. They're not dragging that baggage to the next hole. And top players will do that. I mean, how many times have we seen Tiger Woods over the years as an example where, you know, he hit a bad shot and, you know, he'll thump the club in the ground, but then by the time he gets up to the next shot, it's like he wouldn't have known he hit a bad shot. And he gets right back into that mindset. And that's somebody that's able to control their emotions. And that's not an easy thing for a lot of golfers to do.
It's not. I mean, it's like having amnesia, right? You know, like bang, it's over. I'm really mad right now. That was a shot I didn't want to hit, right? You're right.
Yep.
Tiger's a great example. You know, why is it going right? But then immediately the next shot, refocus back into a great pre-shot routine and focused on the next shot at hand, forgetting about. And the thing is, not carrying the weight of the judgment and emotion of that last shot is really challenging. And it's something that, but it's something that we can definitely focus and work on, right? Because it's a skill. It's a skill like chipping. It's just the mental and emotional piece of this that I think, if a lot of our players could do that, I think they would enjoy themselves more on the golf course, too. besides the peak performance, yeah.
Right.
For sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And it goes to your point is, yeah, you have to work on all aspects. It, you know, it's not just about everybody spends all the time on the range, you know, hitting shots out into the range or chipping or putting or whatever, but they don't work on the mental side of the game or the emotions. And that's a big part of it. The last one we're going to hit is enjoying the experience, which sort of follows nicely to what you just said. And that is, you know, for those particularly that like to be more competitive, if you're a peak performer, then you love to be competitive. Too often the average golfer views playing tournaments as a chore. So some even
right.
appear as if they're having a painful mental experience while on the golf course.
Right.
And we've seen that in a lot of corporate events. So, again, takeaway is maintaining a positive attitude toward any event will help shape how you feel about the event. Your final thoughts here.
Oh, no doubt. I'm smiling as you just said that at the corporate event. I got a text from one of my students was playing a corporate event of a picture of a water hazard and sent it to me and said, why? With question marks. You know, like, so like this really negative experience about, oh my God, why is there a water hazard here? Why is this so difficult? And why am I out here? Like almost like she's going to get dental work done and she's going to play golf. Right. So kind
right.
of approaching the game from a real positive, excited, enthusiastic kind of concept, maybe even a curious one. You know what I mean? Like a curious mind about what that's going to be like and enjoying the moment of being out there playing and getting rid of the list of things that seem like, oh, my God, this is like I'm having major surgery when all I'm doing is playing on the golf course.
Yeah. Ultimately, I think you have to keep in mind it's a game.
Right.
You know, no matter what level you're playing at, it's a game. And, you know, obviously when you're playing at a higher level, you know, there's money involved and things like that. But again, you have to enjoy the experience. If you're so anxious and your anxiety levels are so high that you can't just get out there and enjoy the moment, then you're going to be continually frustrated. And that negative talk, as you said, is just going to keep creeping in there. And that's where the very final one, we'll wrap this up, is building confidence. Again, peak performers know that they have the ability to produce optimal results across a wide range of circumstances. So it's essential for those golfers to maintain positive beliefs and thoughts during a round of golf. So no matter what happened during the shots leading up to the current shot. So again, this goes to what we just talked about is the takeaway is being focused on the task at hand. Don't allow negative thoughts about your round to continue to creep in. I famously have said on the show many times, I equate some of these golfers that are constantly bringing the negative baggage as somebody that's walking down the in the airport terminal with, you know,
right.
slugging about three or four bags behind them. And that's exactly
yeah.
the metaphor I use. It's exactly what it's like on the golf course. You can tell the people bringing baggage, how they practice, how they warm up, is that there's a lot of anxiety. They haven't even stepped to the first tee yet, and they're already thinking of all these negative things from the last round they played or the last time they were at the golf course. And confidence comes from the ability to not just work on the physical parts of your game, but the other aspects that we talked about today. Your final thoughts, and then we'll wrap up.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I love the image of the baggage. That's a great one. I'm going to borrow that here.
Yeah, you're welcome to it.
I love it. What I want to say too, just kind of final thoughts on this. I think a lot of this is managing expectations. And like literally, truly sitting down and assessing where your game is at, whatever it is, you know, 100, somebody's shooting 100, someone who's shooting 75, whatever it might be, where my game is at, where do I want it to go? And then really being very diligent about setting particular goals that make sense as you move forward in the game. I see a lot of people upset on the golf course and frustrated because their expectations are not even with where they're at ability-wise, right? You know,
right.
Like it's not realistic, you know. I do this a lot even teaching new players here. Let's say we're working on a half shot. I've had this happen. We're working just a half shot just to get some, you know, mechanics and face control, whatever. The first thing I say is these are our expectations. We're only looking for the ball to go about 15 yards, let's say, right? We're only looking for this.
Mm-hmm.
We're only looking for that. The balls that are whizzing over our head, that's not what we're – that's not even realistic at this point. because I've had clients, even in that small setting, say, well, shouldn't I be hitting the ball further, right? As if, you know, just not knowing the realistic place where they're at. So to kind of fall back on that, really being diligent about where I'm at, and that's okay, and having the right expectations about what that day is going to bring. And that helps you continue to work towards your goal, and it also builds confidence. Because if your level is I'm a double bogey golfer, or you know on a
yep.
on a you know that's fine. So if you are if you suddenly now become a bogey golfer on maybe half the holes, man, you should have confidence that you're going in the right direction. Where many people will come back to the lesson tee and say to me, "Oh, I'm terrible. I'm not getting any better." When in reality, they
yeah,
are.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're exact. That's a great point. I mean, you have to level out your expectations. You know, where's your game at? Be realistic with those expectations. And then the final thing, too, is you have to practice with a purpose. I mean, how many times, mm-hmm. you know, you've said to somebody, okay, we're going to work on, you know, a short pitch shot. So let's say 20-yard pitch shot. And, you know, they're scratching their head, well, I don't know how to hit that, or I'm not confident hitting that. Well, you know, you've just spent an hour on the range. You know, what were you doing? Well,
right.
I was hitting balls. Well, why aren't you
right.
practicing? You know, if that's something that, you know, that's what I'm getting is you have to practice with a purpose. You know, it's great to hit
yep.
those great drives out there, and it's great to hit those hybrids and whatnot out into the range. And maybe you chip a few shots and make a few putts, but you're not practicing what you're going to be faced with out in the golf course. You're going to be faced with maybe a 20-yard pitch or a 30-yard, what have you, right?
Right. Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. And there is a reason, I believe, that when people warm up, let's say, or they're at the range and they're just hitting balls, they're not really even going at a target. So everything is okay.
No.
It's a little right, it's a little left, right? They're not, right? I'm hitting pretty good. It feels solid. But it's not relative to anything that they're going to face. So one of the things that we do here, again, obviously, you know, at a driving range, and most people in the United States are facing this, right? Because we're not on the golf course practicing. So what I try my hardest to implore to my students that not only do you want to have the reps and the drills, but let's get out here and let's go to different targets. So when you're practicing, you also have a component of your practice session that week that's a play component. You know, I'm going to hit drive down to the right-hand side. My target is here. Now I'm going to hit a fairway wood. Now I'm going to hit a wedge. But all at different targets and different angles. So they can start to get like, you know, it's like playing and you're practicing playing, not just
yep.
hitting balls. Yeah, for sure.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Raking the balls and hitting them, you know, out in the
yeah.
range can be fun. And if you want to do that once in a while, there's nothing wrong with doing that. But if you want to improve, you've got to start practicing like you're playing and with shots. And, you know, imagination's a wonderful thing. And, you know, a lot of people, unfortunately, I think have forgotten to have imagination. I think that's where kids, you know, excel because, you know, they'll be imagining all kinds of things, even if it's not realistic. You know, they're at least imagining things. Adults get out there and they don't, it's like their brain freezes or something past a certain age. And, they just don't seem to think about it.
Well, here's the other
unfortunately.
Thing. Unfortunately, that's so, and it's so true. And the other thing kids are great at, they're great at failing. Meaning,
yes.
And I think, you know, I'm using that as a relative term, but, you know, we have a presence week camp. I had a new player yesterday. He did fantastic, but he missed three or four balls. I don't think it ever fazed him. The fifth ball came up and he was refocusing. Okay, I got it, you know. And I think if we can have a childlike mind sometime, or beginner's mind, right? So many books have been written about that, but it's true.
Right.
You know, being curious mm-hmm. and having some imagination and God, that sounds like a lot more fun than, oh my God, the corporate event's coming and I'm going to look bad.
Uh-huh.
And what is my boss going to say? And all those things that
yep.
we do to ourselves as adults, for sure.
Well, they sabotage before they even get there. And that's what they
yep.
do is, again, that's that negative baggage. They're, you know, it's like, again, going in the terminal with all that baggage. Well, I'm going to miss my flight or, you know, something's going to happen. It's going to be delayed. They automatically go to that negative self-talk because that's comfortable. That's what they know. So you have to retrain yourself into thinking something different. So, all right, we got to wrap up because I know you've got to go. And we've got to close things off. And I hear the Rugrats are coming in and getting ready
they
to work
came,
on.
They just came in.
Yeah, I know. I can hear them. So I know you got lots of stuff on your plate. Very quickly, Michelle, for those that want to reach out and connect with you and maybe at some point maybe even come and visit you at Chelsea Piers, what's the best way they can reach out to get in hold of you?
Yeah, ChelseaPiers.com. And could I get my email address? Would that be okay?
Sure. Yeah, that's fine.
It's M-M-E-L-I-A at ChelseaPiers.com.
Perfect. So no excuses not to reach out to Michelle. And if you're in the New York area, especially in Manhattan, go to Chelsea Piers. It's a great facility, and make sure that you connect with Michelle, and she'll be more than happy to help you with your game. Thank you very much for coming on and spending some extra time. I had a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed the no BS zone. That's something that we always try to do. And I look forward to you coming and joining us again on a future show. And hopefully I'll make sure I wrangle Cindy to be on the show as well. But thank you, Michelle, for taking time this morning. And you have a great day, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Awesome. Thank you, Ted. I had a great time, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye. All right. That was Michelle Melia, senior LPGA professional at Chelsea Piers in Manhattan, New York, and very graciously stuck around for the no BS zone discussion that normally Cindy and I would have. And again, this was sort of the part two, mastering your game, becoming the best player you can be. And we specifically talked on the golfing mindset and emotions part of the game. Next week, we'll have in the no BS zone will be sort of the final third part wrap up with some specific things that you can do. You know, we've sort of talked about the last two times, this time and the one before on the physical side, just sort of generalities of things to be mindful of to become a better player, but you need some action steps. So we're going to give you those on the next BS Zone next week on the show. So hope you enjoyed it. If you missed most of the show, you're welcome to go to blogtalkradio.com/womenofgolf. And scroll down to the on-demand section, and this show will be there in its entirety, the recorded version, and you can go back there in just a few minutes, and you'll be able to listen to it. But on that note, again, special thanks to LPGA professional Michelle Melia for joining us, and I look forward to seeing you here next week on the Women of Golf. God bless everybody, and have a great week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed listening to this week's Women of Golf show. Ted and Cindy wish to thank this week's special guests. Remember to join them every Tuesday from 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern here on the iGolf Sports Network or on any of these social media platforms, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, CastBox, TalkStream Live, and of course Spotify. To get updates on the show, you can follow the Women of Golf Facebook page at www.facebook.com/womenofgolf. This has been a production of the iGolf Sports Network.